Hello and welcome back. We are here on Thursday night with another show with Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio. I'm Michelle Hager, managing partner of Blue Cirrus in South Carolina. And tonight we have our next two guests, who are Joe Wexler, the CEO of Virtue Ally, and Caitlin Torrance, the executive director of Medical University of South Carolina's Health Solutions. So we are very glad to have both of you. Thank you so much for joining the show tonight.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So we discuss on this show telehealth and healthcare issues, try to educate our listeners and anyone that may listen along anywhere in the world about the benefits of receiving care via telehealth. I want to help our listeners understand kind of where you are in the market, what you do. So tell us a little bit about Virtue Ally and MUSC. And Joe, you want to start with Virtue Ally?
Sure. Thanks again, Michelle. Virtue Ally is a virtual care services company that was actually born out of the Medical University of South Carolina. So we've been in business for just over 2 years officially, but the program started internally at MUSC back in 2016, I think. We focus primarily on virtual nursing and virtual sitting or patient safety observation. And we are continuously growing those services in partnership with MUSC to evolve into more of a virtual hub for other opportunities within the hospital setting. So it's been an exciting couple of years for us, and we now provide services in multiple states. And we've got multiple offices and teams doing that for a handful of different systems and growing.
That's great. And Caitlin, tell us a little bit about your work at Medical University of South Carolina, and you're based in Charleston.
Yes, I am. And maybe it'll help just to give a bit of an overview of MUSC as well. For those that might not be familiar, MUSC is based in Charleston, South Carolina. We are a comprehensive academic medical center. So we have the academia side with the university, where we're training med students and have six colleges across those groups. And then we also have a research arm, and then we have the health system arm. So we serve 2.4 million patients across South Carolina. So within our geography, South Carolina is a very rural state outside of a few pockets. And so that gives us a lot of interesting opportunities to innovate and to explore, which we'll dig into here today. And my work, respectively, across MUSC is really the innovation and commercialization arm. So the team that I run is our Health Solutions arm. We were founded a couple of years ago, so still pretty a new arm for a 200-year-old academic medical center. But we're a newer arm and really focus on how do we redesign care delivery models? How do we bring new innovations to life? And then how, in terms of Virtue Ally, which Joe's here to represent, how do we actually commercialize those and help other systems across the country to bring those innovations into their systems as well? So I'm excited to dig into those a bit further today.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about how organizations get into this. I think some people don't understand that health systems do this type of innovation and investment in innovation. And tell us a little bit about why, from your perspective, and Joe, I'll start with you, why is innovation in healthcare so important, and especially for health equity? You mentioned, Caitlin, we're 90% rural here in South Carolina with the variety of pockets where I am in Greenville and where you are in Charleston, where the urban areas are. And it's so important that we address health equity and patients' needs. So why is innovation so important from your perspective, Joe?
Yeah, it's interesting. I started my career not in healthcare and just spent probably the first 15 years of my professional life outside of healthcare working in other industries. And when I got involved in healthcare, a CEO of a large health system, the first thing he said to me was, "We're a little bit behind and we need to take some notes from other industries that are embracing technology, embracing connectivity, anything as simple as how we do business on a day-to-day basis, but also how we engage with our clients." Historically, the model has always been that patients have to come to the big hospital to get everything done. And that is a challenge, particularly in rural environments where you don't have access to things, but also there's so much more opportunity to bring care to where it's needed most. And it's been really refreshing to see health systems take that on and really embraced that need for innovation over the last several years. And it's created opportunities not only for businesses like us, but certainly for residents of all in all locations to get access to the best care. So that's probably from my standpoint. I mean, healthcare can always get more efficient. All industries can and more effective, but it's also really driving the mission of taking care of patients where they are and where they need it.
You know, we always kind of feel behind in healthcare, I think, because it's such a conservative industry. And obviously, you know, we're trying to make sure that we're building trust in our patient base. And you're right, using these innovative techniques, a way to reach patients where they are and allow them to get care in a way that makes sense to them. So, Caitlin, from your perspective, why is it so important for you and MUSC to be part of this innovation cycle?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe, you hit on quite a few good topics there. I think the realization across the industry has been, how do we learn from other pockets? How do we learn from the technology industry? How do we actually bring people like yourself, Joe, into healthcare to really help us rapidly innovate, something that healthcare doesn't historically do well? And I think it's important for a few reasons, right? We know that we need to listen to patients and consumers more. And that's a lot of our work in the innovation space is how do we design and bring some of that design thinking methodology into the healthcare ecosystem? How do we really design for what patients want and need? I think for so many years, healthcare was truly driven by the providers and driven societally by people deciding what patients needed. And I think really, especially as a country, we're now saying, no, actually, we have a consumer voice and we do have the buying power to decide where we want to receive our care. And I think, especially with a lot of the new players in the space and retail care becoming so much more commonplace, really, with folks like Amazon and Wynn Medical and Walmart, and we're going to see that continue to shake things up. I'm actually really excited about it from an innovation standpoint because I think it's going to really push us to redesign ourselves, or we will be redesigned.
No question about that. It already pushes the industry, and we already see lots and lots of either industry collapse or expansion in different areas and acquisitions, et cetera, across the telehealth industry. I'm interested, given that you mentioned, Caitlin, the idea of patients and their voice in this process, and how can we make this better for patients and those that are, I hate to use the word consuming healthcare, but sometimes we use it in that term, but it's not one that I like. But for those that are needing that care, how do you have patient involvement in your innovation cycle? And if you do, how do you incorporate them?
Yeah, absolutely, we do. And I'll say that I use the word consumers because I believe that patients now have a choice, right? You're not always going to be a patient. You have a choice of where you go for care. And so that's where we use the term consumer. How do we incorporate this into our innovation life cycle? Very early on, when we're in our discovery phase or when we're even looking to pilot or deploy technologies, we have PFAC groups, which are patient family advisory councils deployed across our organization. That's very common across healthcare that we start to tap into. But we've also recently launched a group called MUSC Advise. We have over 3,000 patients across the state who have volunteered to just give us advice as we're starting to explore certain things. So, Joe and I are, for instance, working on a virtual nursing program. We have the opportunity to tap into these groups to say, well, how would this messaging resonate with you? Are there things we might should consider? How do you feel about a virtual nurse? How does this impact your care? And so we can tap into those groups. I think those are two things we're doing today. I think there are many more things that we can and should be doing, and we are actively looking at how do we continuously involve that consumer voice as we're developing our virtual care strategy and really everything across innovation. So I don't know that we have a perfect model just yet, but I think it's something that we are absolutely working toward and continuing to refine.
Yeah, and I'll just follow up that as we're working on that virtual nursing launch, I mean, we're in it. It's early days, and one thing we have found to be very important and impactful is getting the feedback from those patients in those first several interactions and refining the way we work with them over time. So it's really important. We might not know exactly the right solution as we start on day one, but we don't let that hold us back from progress, and we use that as a as an opportunity to make it better.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
follow on, Caitlin.
Yeah, no, I was really thinking as you were talking through that, right? This is to me the product development life cycle, right? It's
Yes.
how do we deploy things that other industries have been doing for a long time, like user experience research. How do we actually embed that into our process? And that's stuff that we're actively doing. I think there's levers to how we learn about what's working and what's not working. And in a true agile fashion, we're then looking to say, okay, how do we pivot the program because our patients are giving us this feedback? And I think that's a super important part of really in any innovation initiative across healthcare that we do is continuously getting that feedback from patients. And our employees and providers as well.
Absolutely. I have a couple of follow-ups to that. One, you used the term agile, and I want to make sure that our listeners know what that means. And generally, that's a development term, even though we use it in everyday language, but a development term where you receive feedback, you modify, you receive more feedback, you modify. And so you can constantly change rather than sort of developing an entire solution and then saying, hey, what does this look like? You develop small pieces. So this agile, or sometimes there's other types of those like waterfall, et cetera, not to get too technical for all of our listeners. But one of the things that I can imagine people are thinking about right now is how can my nurse virtually bring me a glass of water or do what I need to have done at the bedside. So, Joe, tell us a little bit about, you mentioned telesitter. What does that mean? What does virtual nursing mean? What does it look like? And what does telesitter look like? And why are those two things important?
Yeah, it is fascinating. We consider our service and our team to be an extension of the team that's on the ground. And our goal is to make the way that they take care of patients optimal for we want to optimize the time that the people in the hospital, whether it's nurses or other technicians or other support staff, are doing the things that they're meant to do, and they're the highest and best use of their time and the money the health system is spending. So it's fascinating to have learned how much behind the scenes administrative work, if you will, that a nurse, for example, has to do to take care of a single patient. So there might be for every 10 minutes, the nurse has to spend at the bedside physically with the patient, hands on the patient or bringing water or whatever. There's
Yeah.
another 45 minutes that they have to be just manually keying things into a computer, for example. And we can take a majority of that work off of their plates remotely and still be able to interact with that patient and be part of their care plan. So, we look at it as relieving the bedside nurse of some of those administrative and overhead tasks that are very important and still require that clinical license, but enabling them to take better care of the patients at the bedside. The same is true with telesitter. So historically, there are patients that need one-to-one observation because they're fall risk or suicide risk, or they just need that oversight. And they've historically had to use one-to-one sitters to do that, which is a hard position to fill. It's not super rewarding when you're in the hospital. And a lot of times you see hospitals actually leaning on nurses or security guards or other
Right.
resources to do that. Again, taking them away from what their core use case should be. And we found that we're actually more effective at doing that virtually than even the one-to-one in-person sitter is. So we're reducing the need for that staff, which is always a challenge at the hospitals, and bringing it in-house, and it's usually a cost savings and it's more effective. So again, we're an extension of the team. We partner with everybody that's on the ground and like to get to the point where they see us as an extension of the team and not an outside kind of in the distant, unknown entity.
Right. And I think when I consider virtual nursing from a patient perspective, that allows them to have more nursing care, more discussion with their care team. And one thing that you didn't mention is around really observing them and the virtual nurses being able to observe their labs, their telemetry, their whatever it is that's happening, and be able to intervene more quickly where we have nurses on the floor who we know, based on workforce challenges, are already overworked. And you already mentioned some of the other reasons why nurses are overworked. And that would allow them to really be that supportive supportive role in the healthcare environment. Super important. So hopefully that explained to folks what virtual nurse could do for them in their next hospital stay. So
and we actually like establish relationships with the patients. Our nurses and sitters are, you know, we're in the room, two-way audio visual. They end up knowing each other's names. We get to meet their families. So even though it's virtual, we've become part of that process, and that's really rewarding on both sides.
That's true. Really good point. I've seen some organizations have sort of really large monitors in that are there for television or whatever during the day, but when they do use them for telehealth or for virtual nursing, they're able to have sort of almost full size people from that image perspective. And it does allow you to create a more tight relationship with the patient. So really good point. So Caitlin, tell us a little bit about how you said Virtual Ally and MUSC are working together. So how is MUSC utilizing Virtual Ally to address patients' needs?
Well, I think you both have actually mentioned quite a bit of this, right? We know as an industry, we have workforce challenges. Every single health system, hospital that you go to is struggling, right? There's not enough physicians. There's not enough nurses. And as an industry as a whole, we're really having to take a step back and say, okay, how do we redesign our care models? How do we help the providers practice at the top of license? How do we weave in technology to help support our care team members? And so I look to Joe's team at Virtual Ally really as an extension, as he mentioned, of our teams to say, how can we shift responsibilities from those frontline staff that are such valuable, very limited resources, right? How do we shift things like some of the documentation burden? How can we use technology to automate some of our documentation capture? Yeah. How do we use the virtual nurses or virtual sitters to do some of that monitoring so that our bedside nurses can round on the floors? And so I really look at Virtual Ally as being that partner to us to help us extend our care delivery, but then to also help us as we're really, as I mentioned, kind of rethinking and redesigning who does what and why do we do that? And from an innovation standpoint, I think we have to take the mindset of just because we've always done it this way does not mean it is the way that we must deliver care in the future. And so we're really taking that to heart and really trying to take a step back and say, how do we deliver nursing? How do we use technology to those nurses? And then how do we use extension of our workforce through the virtual nursing program, embedding them into that care team model? I mean, what does that look like? And we're really learning from that, right? We're learning a lot of good things, and we're learning things that we're going to have to work through. And a lot of that is change management and care team changes. And some of that we work through. And so I think we're learning, but Virtual Ally has been a really great partner to MUSC because we know we can't build this all ourselves, right? And that's what I think is so great about finding partners across the industry, right? We work really closely with Virtual Ally and the services delivery component and really that care team extension. And then we also are very actively layering in really innovative technologies to also assist with some of these workflows. And so it's really exciting to see come to life.
Yeah, I think when I consider the innovation centers that I see across the country and how they're utilized to really create and foster an opportunity to grow a new business, test something out, learn what the challenges are. And Joe, I'm not taking you off the hook because I want to know what the families and patients have said about Virtual Ally. We're going to talk about that in a second. So keep that in mind. But just the innovation itself, how does MUSC foster the innovation really across the healthcare industry, even aside from the work that you're doing with Virtual Ally?
Well, I'll say that we're part of forums that are nationwide, right? So we're sharing. I was just at a conference last week. We were very actively discussing virtual nursing and the future for hospital at home. And we're in the conversation with Boston Children's. And then we're talking as well and learning from Houston Methodist, and MUSC sharing what we're learning. And so I think what one of the beautiful things about the healthcare industry is that It's so collaborative. And I think more and more, especially in the innovation space, we don't all have to tackle this alone. We can do this together. We can learn from one another. And I really look at MUSC as being a big thought partner in that space and sharing what we're learning externally and also learning from other systems and saying, I'm regularly texting Joe saying, hey, I talked to someone from Boston Children's and they're utilizing X, Y, and Z. Let's explore. How do we think about that? And so I think there's a really big benefit from having that innovation mindset, looking outside into the industry. And then also just really continuing, like we mentioned earlier, just to bring that agile approach and really kind of innovate and learn along the way. And I think we're very fortunate to have a culture across MUSC. I mean, innovation is one of our pillars as an organization. And so I think as an academic organization, we're constantly needing to learn and grow. And so I'm fortunate that that's really part of our culture and DNA here.
Yeah, definitely. So Joe, tell me a little bit about what you heard from the families and the patients that you can share and their feedback on virtual nursing. Was it positive? Were there growing pains in there? And what can you share about the feedback?
Yeah, I think I'll echo a couple of things Caitlin just said quickly in that we're continuously learning and open to that. And I recognize that we're a small component of everything that can come out of the innovation space, especially in telehealth. But we like having a seat at the table. I think, I mean, man, some of the patient stories are really phenomenal. We have a lot of data and history on the virtual sitting side, and there's a couple of great patient stories or patient and family stories that we love to tell. For a long time, when the patient's in the hospital, we're the only person that's really, really there, and we're providing that level of comfort and security that a family member that can't be there 24/7 knows that we are. We've had things like we had a patient pass away. She was on in the transitional care unit, but probably 2 weeks towards the end of her life, we were there. And the family member came in to our office a couple of weeks later and showed us the funeral program. And this is a sad story, but the funeral program and had our team thanked on there,
Wow, that's
which is
awesome.
like really touching. They
That's
just said
moving.
they were so grateful to have us with their loved one in that time. We've had things like being able to communicate with the patients when the nurses on the floor weren't able to. One of them comes to mind where we had a patient that couldn't really articulate why she was upset, but she was upset, and they were trying to get this patient moved on to out of the hospital. Our observer was able to understand that she really just wanted a scoop of ice cream, and once we got that ice cream for her, then she was great, and it kind of progressed everything else. So something completely unrelated to her care, but that's what really made it happen. On the nursing side, again, still early. I think at first, we were maybe a little too much involved. We were in the room too much or for too long, and it was a little bit hard for the patients. So we've continuously kind of revamped the way we interact to the point where all the anecdotes are great, particularly from the nurses, but the families love having somebody that's there that they can kind of interact with when their nurse is out doing something else and they might otherwise have to wait half an hour until they can get into their room. So
I think first of all, a scoop of ice cream does solve a lot of
agreed.
things for a lot of different ills. But I've also heard this sort of doorbell, door knock, technology to make sure so patients don't feel like there's someone just popping into the room and they're not aware, just like they would in the hospital space, that they're able to knock on the door before they come in and things like that. So it's a kind of a virtual door knock there. So that sounds amazing. Love to see this in play and it working in your patient spaces. But we've talked a little bit about workforce. And thank you for sharing those poignant stories. That was really great, Joe. But on the workforce challenges in South Carolina in particular, we have, I think data shows across the country something like 250,000 nurses that we don't not going to have within the next year or two that we need, and then we can do the same data with physicians, et cetera. So how does Virtual Ally, and you mentioned some of the services that you're providing, how do you address the workforce challenges in South Carolina with this technology?
Yeah, I mean it's a crisis, really. the nursing shortage, and even other support roles in the hospital. So there's a couple things. I mean, we're able to hire one person to every maybe 12 people a hospital would need to on the sitting side. So already we're allowing them to take care of more patients with fewer people, and which is really kind of important because the number of people that are in the industry in this workforce is going down. So we can make that more effective so that more patients can be seen. On the nursing side, the same is true. There's post-COVID 2024 work from home, remote work, the burnout that's happening at the bedside. People are leaving the industry, to your point, and hospitals are saying they have to close down whole units because they can't staff it well enough. Because of our virtual work, we're able to take those nurses that still want to be in it, but maybe don't want to be at the bedside, and give them an opportunity to continue to take care of patients, but from where they are, rather than having to go into those hospitals. So particularly in the rural settings where they're losing nurses, we can still provide that same nursing care and allow those hospitals to not close down whole units, for example. So there's a lot of kind of angles there, but yeah, we're excited to have an opportunity to give those jobs, if you will, the people in a
Yeah.
different way to do the same thing.
I think that I read, I don't know how many hospitals closed even in South Carolina, but that's true across the country in rural areas where they're not able to be solvent and not able to address workforce challenges. So they do have to close either units or entire hospitals because of that. And certainly telehealth in general, not just virtual nursing, but in general, has been able to help not only keep those patients in their communities, which is more helpful for them and their patients and their families, but also be able to keep a needed employer in the area to continue to provide healthcare to that area. So, really good point. Yeah, Caitlin, please add.
Yeah, I think this is really fundamental to MUSC's strategy all up, right? We are a safety net hospital. We are across a very rural state. Many of our locations were hospitals that otherwise would have, probably gone away. But we believe so much that it is important to provide care close to home and to have access for patients to have access to really high quality care and to be able to get transported where they need to go for higher levels of care at times. And then really to integrate, you brought a great point, Michelle, around integrating the virtual care components to this, right? That's something that's very a huge focus for us right now, really, is as we think about, yes, we have some of the local hospitals, but how do we maybe have a very specialized surgeon in Charleston that can remote in to rooms in more rural areas, can meet with patients, can do second opinions with some of the local lower level providers, even meet directly with patients. But then also, how do we also think about how do we surround patients outside of the four walls of the hospital? I think historically, healthcare has focused so much on what happens within our four walls. And as we all know, we're all healthcare consumers, whether we want to be or not. And we consume health-related things all day, every day, even if we're not paying attention to it. So how do we reach patients and our consumers across the market when and where they want to receive care, when and where they want to engage with us? How do we offer access to virtual appointments if you're interested from your phone? Or how do we offer a hub that you can go to because you're a rural older patient in South Carolina that doesn't have access to great Wi-Fi or know how to join a video visit? How do we offer a place that's close to you that you can go and have the care that you need close to home? So I wanted to add that in because I think that is so fundamental to just rural care access across the country that we're seeing. And then also how MUSC is approaching it with virtual care being a huge strategy and priority for us, as well as how do we attack and approach some of these workforce challenges in really creative ways, like our work with Virtue Ally as an extension.
Yeah, and I'll share. So for those listening, I'm in the upstate of South Carolina, which is the northern part of the state, and you are in the southern part. Most people know where Charleston is for probably from TV shows and also the amazing city that it is. It's about a 3-hour drive, 3.5-hour drive from Greenville to South Carolina. From a personal story, I do have have a specialist from MUSC that I have to see and drive down there. And I've done a telehealth visit with that specialist, and it's been invaluable. That saves me about an entire day of driving to be able to get that care. So it's an important element in both your individual specialist access strategy, but also has a patient satisfier, no question. And there's been a trend line in telehealth post-COVID, which sometimes people erroneously define as a turn down in usage, that, oh, now people don't want to use telehealth. And I think this is a misnomer, because we went to almost 100% telehealth for obvious reasons. And yes, it's going to go back to, you know, in-person care to some degree. But even pre-COVID numbers, we have higher usage of telehealth. So when you think about telehealth in the future and how we have to adapt and change, what's your opinion about what it's going to look like in the future, and where will we have to go? And Joe, I'll let you start.
Yeah, I'll probably defer most of this to Caitlin, but just quickly, I think this train isn't slowing down in terms of evolving how health systems have to take care of patients to make it cost effective and have the right access at the right time. So whether it's more virtual visits like the one you mentioned, Michelle, or just the way hospitals actually work to take care of the patients while they're there, there will continue to be more and more integration between technology providers, service providers, and care providers that bring the right people to the patient at the right time, rather than just hoping that the doctor's in that day when somebody comes into a place.
Absolutely.
That's the extent of my knowledge on it. But
no, that was great. Thank you, Caitlin. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I echo what Joe says. And I think really we are looking at the future. I mentioned earlier, right? We're actually starting to use more and more of the term virtual health beyond just traditional telemedicine, because we know it encompasses so much more. And we're really thinking about how do we create that holistic care experience, right? If you think about as a patient, you're so used to, I think everyone at this point has an Amazon account that you're ordering from constantly. Your Amazon account knows who you are. Your Amazon account knows what you like and don't like, how to reach you. So I think technology companies have really pushed healthcare to think about how do we deliver that same type of holistic experience for patients. And I think that's where we've got to go. So for us, it's really thinking about that in-home care delivery models. How do we provide, you know, a patient with chronic diseases with access to a culturally competent care navigator? How do we provide access to maybe there's a device that you need to use to check your diabetes every day, but have we made sure you have the education to do that? And how do we do that in a virtual manner? How do we check in with you? How do we leverage technologies, right? We know technologies, especially with the use of AI, are rapidly changing and evolving. And I truly believe for the better for healthcare, because it's going to open up just the ability to access and communicate with patients in a new way, and provide convenience and simplicity. And I think we'll continue to see the telehealth services that we offer today. For instance, MUSC is rolling out new specialties constantly with telehealth. We've rolled out endocrinology, rheumatology. We're exploring how do we do more in the weight management space? How do we continue to build new virtual services that our patients want and need from the lens of helping to provide access quicker, right? There's many of our specialties have months long waiting lists, but what would it look like for us to deliver a virtual appointment much sooner? And maybe you first meet with a PA or you meet with a nurse practitioner. They help do some of that initial education and triage, and then they can get you in to see in person or virtually that specialist that's in much higher demand. And so we're really actively thinking about some of that. I think that's where telehealth is by no means going away. I think we're actually going to continue to expand how we have built upon the foundation of telehealth. I should mention MUSC has been doing telemedicine for years. We're one of two national centers of excellence. And so we have a great foundation, but what we're doing now is saying, okay, how do we build upon that? And how do we expand to think about even roles outside of clinical? We're even thinking about, okay, how do we have referral specialists and could we make those roles virtual? And how do we automate certain things that today we wait in long lines to do? How do we use technology and how do we use the virtual component to help us there? So a lot of exciting stuff to come. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I
Yeah, no.
actually think COVID accelerated things. I mean, all
Oh,
this
yeah.
stuff was happening, but COVID created an instance where people had to figure it out. Things were like kind of percolating in the background, but there was an urgency to get it done, and it catapulted everything that was happening, 5 or 10 years ahead very quickly. And now we know that it works, and we know that there's more and more opportunities. So I think COVID didn't, COVID slowing down isn't going to dial it back. I think it's just increased the starting point.
Really allowed everyone to see what was possible. And then everyone said, hey, I think I need more of that. I need some more of that. I was thinking, Caitlin, about your different specialties. And I've also, from an academic medical center perspective, heard about thinking about second opinions and when you want a second opinion on, a devastating diagnosis. These are great ways to do virtual visits. And really, I'll jump on my own soapbox. This is where payers really need to get on board, because you're already paying for someone to potentially fly and travel for a second opinion. And actually, it may be, less expensive for the patient to stay where they are and continue to do that second opinion. So I'll make you all comment on my own soapbox issue there. But so, in your experience and perspective, what do you think about this new artificial intelligence, the buzzword of 2024, probably of 2023 too, but we'll have a word cloud somewhere at some conference and it'll have artificial intelligence right smack in the middle of it. And how will we use that to catapult things in the future? What projects are you working on potentially that have AI embedded in them? And Joe, I'm going to let you start first again.
Yeah, another hot topic.
We're hard-hitting journalism here at We Hear and Tell All the Radio.
It's exciting, certainly. Based on what we have seen so far and how it can apply to the things that we do, we are really looking forward to what AI can help bring to our services. So Caitlin alluded to it a little bit earlier, but having some AI help with documentation or automate some of the workflow process, all of that seems to be real. And we are actively working with technology companies that are building those things out to see how they can really impact our team, the way we work with patients, our productivity, all of those things. I think what AI means may be different to different people in different contexts. So there's some of that kind of figuring out of what we're actually saying when we mean AI. Is it just motion sensing technology, or is it real ambient learning and listening and proactively getting involved in the process? So yeah, we're right there, shoulder to shoulder with some of the leading people developing that technology. And Caitlin is also very much ahead of the curve on that stuff. So I think our role in it is interesting in that, we've got the people providing the services so that it's really going to impact how our company looks as those things become more and more mature. So it's exciting. A little still unknown, but optimistic.
And you, Caitlin?
Yeah, absolutely. I spend a lot of my time looking at AI, exploring AI, learning about, right? I think something we all forget is we're all still learning, and we're all still, even if you know something about AI today, it is going to rapidly change. And by tomorrow, you need to learn something new. So I think we've all acknowledged we need to continuously learn. I think important to note for on the AI space piece is, I know there's a lot of buzz and it's the shiny object right now, but around Gen AI and what ChatGPT has brought forward. But I think the real opportunities for healthcare is to really start with, on the automation side, right? There's still a lot of AI that's around automation and predictive analytics. And as we know in healthcare, we're not often very efficient. And so, how do we look to some of what we talked about today is, how do we start to automate certain things? Do we need humans to do certain tasks, or could we use a documentation assistant like a Nuance Dx Copilot, which we're actively rolling out at NERC, to say, okay, we can have our providers focus on the patient experience. You come in the room, your provider's not looking at their computer typing away the whole time. They're engaged with you in conversation. We know patients want that. And then how do we have where our providers also don't have to go home at night and type up up notes. It's a win-win for both, in my opinion. So it's one of the, I would say, kind of what we look at as a low-hanging fruit, right? We're starting with ambient scribe technology like DAX and to say, okay, we can use AI to help us transcribe that patient conversation by listening into the patient and provider conversation. The AI then helps transcribe it and then auto-populates in a provider's notes. So when they leave the room, they can review those notes, approve them, make any changes. And that's done in a matter of seconds or minutes rather than many of our providers, whether or not people know it. Most physicians and APPs spend time every single night in their pajamas at home typing up their notes. That's when we talk about a workforce challenge and burnout. I don't think any of us want to spend our evenings doing that. And so how do we help them with some of these tools? So I'm really excited about tools like that that can really enhance the provider and the patient experience. In the virtual space, we're also looking at tools. We have some key partners in our virtual space. So yes, we work with Virtuale, but we also have a software partnership with a company called Andor, who is very actively developing AI in this space. And we are co-developing a lot of that and early testing it with them as we roll out. You know, Joe and I are very interested in things like how we have these command centers that can start to do truly advanced patient monitoring or patient triaging. How do we help people get to where they need to go at the right time? So lots of things that we're exploring. I think when I hear AI, I think folks automatically jump to, we're going to have ChatGPT prescribing medication. And it's like, no, that's, I do not foresee that. And that's not something that's that we're even focused on at all. I think there's a lot of easier, better uses of time for us in the AI space. And so I'm excited that we're prioritizing some of those.
Yeah. And I think that's an indication when you see the AMA defining it as sort of assisted intelligence versus, you know, artificial, or it's assistive to the clinicians. But it is a factor, as I mentioned at the top of this interview, which has been great, by the way, the trust factor in healthcare. We all have to really work on that in the industry, and artificial intelligence is another innovation tool that we have to consider. You know, how is that going to impact the trust factor? And I think some of the projects that you mentioned, Caitlin, that will help providers not only be able to, you know, you have their own home time and utilize their work time more efficiently and be able to keep work at home, at work and home separately, have that work-life balance, but also be able to use some of the artificial intelligence to be able to, you know, expand things that Virtual AI are doing. As you mentioned, Joe, some of the ambient technologies and things like that. I've seen a lot of different tools out there. This has been a great discussion. I really appreciate both of you being on the show. If anyone would like to have more information about VirtuAlly or MUSC, go to VirtuAlly's website at VirtuAlly, which is VirtuAlly.io. So that is VirtuAlly.io. And MUSC is MUSC.edu. So that's Medical University of South Carolina, shortened into MUSC.edu. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show about healthcare and virtual health technologies and virtual healthcare. I really appreciate all of your time today and appreciate you educating us on VirtuAlly and the work that you're doing at MUSC. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michelle. Great work you're doing.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to have you on the show. And this is our final guest for Blue Sierra's Telehealth Radio. Thank you for listening to tonight's show. We are WATD 95.9 Blue Sierra's Radio. We are the smartest show on radio.